Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Young Conductors Podcast.
We are your hosts, Sean and Cole, two conductors on a mission to encourage, educate, and inspire young conductor teachers. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Young Conductors Podcast. We are super excited to welcome Dr. Sinjin. Welcome, Dr. Sinjin.
Hi, so good to be here with both of you.
Yes, good to have you with us. Dr. Sinjin is coming to us live from Missouri, specifically Kansas City, where she is on the choral faculty at the University of Missouri, Kansas City's Conservatory. To get us started, Dr. Sinjin, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Happy to. So I'm in my second year as a visiting assistant professor of choral studies at the University of Missouri, Kansas City Conservatory, where I teach conservatory singers, which is the flagship ensemble, choral union, which is our y'all come group, as I learned to say in the South. That includes students and community members. And then I also lead the graduate choral conducting program, where I teach graduate choral literature and graduate choral conducting. And I'm having a great time. Prior to that, I taught at Georgia State University for 5 years in Atlanta. And then before that, I did my doctorate in choral conducting at Michigan State University. So I'm a Spartan, and I learned to care a lot about sports ball. Go green. And before that, I taught high school choir in New Jersey for 5 years, which is where I'm originally from. And I did my master's in choral conducting at Ithaca College and my undergraduate degree in music education with a vocal emphasis at the College of New Jersey. And so I'm really excited about all things choral music and teaching and conducting, and happy to be here with y'all today.
That's great. Yeah. I'm curious, what is the size of your conducting cohort at UMKC?
Great question. This year we have 5 students. Four master's students and 1 doctoral student.
Oh, that's nice. Are you enjoying that? Is this your first time like having your own cohort?
Yeah, yes. So when I was at Georgia State, I had the opportunity to co-teach and co-mentor graduate students in choral conducting at the master's level. And it's been a wonderful journey that I've really enjoyed mentoring and teaching graduate students last year and this year, leading that program.
That's exciting.
Yeah,
I think so. I mean, I'm having a great time.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that we really like to ask our guests is, what inspired you to pursue a career in conducting? And with that same question, did you have any specific role models that helped grow you as a conductor?
That is a great question. My musical journey was probably very similar to many in terms of I sang in choir and I played in band. I'm a clarinet player. And I did that from 5th grade on all through high school and participated in basically every music and theater opportunity that there was. And I just absolutely loved music and being a part of groups and engaging with my peers in that way and coming together to do artistic things. And I would say I sort of always knew that music would be a very fulfilling path in terms of, you know, professionally and personally. But it was really in my senior year of high school.
That's where it all started.
Where at the end of the year, if your grades were, I forget what the threshold was, but basically if you had really strong grades, which I did, you could apply to a program called Senior Society, where in the last 3 weeks of your senior year, you could apply if you had an accepting placement to go and work with, you know, volunteer essentially 4 hours a day. So I contacted my middle school choir director, who was really formative for me in terms of choral singing. She was somebody who thought that middle school students, and believed this wholeheartedly, had limitless potential for artistry. As long as you gave the students music that was appropriate to their voices and their ranges and you know, pedagogically appropriate, that they could sing with such artistry and beauty. And I just, that was such a transformative time for me in terms of my singing. Anyway, so I wanted to go and work with her when I had the opportunity for Senior Society. And I was thinking, oh, I'll just go hang out with her and, you know, do a little bit of teaching and, you know, observing and just enjoy my time. Well, it was either the first or second day of that placement that she said, why don't you get up in front of the group and conduct them? And it was in that moment, like their very first sounds, you know, standing in front of the ensemble and conducting, that I realized, oh my gosh, this is what I'm meant to do. Yeah. And at the time, I was slated to go to nursing school. And so I mean, this was June, because in the Northeast, schools get out in June. And so I was like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? Like, I'm going to go to nursing school and I'm sure we're not going to be singing in anatomy and physiology. And like, what is going on? Right. And so that it was one of those like, moments that sort of, you know, like, it, I can see clearly now the rain is gone. Like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And so I asked her for conducting lessons. And so she helped me during that window of time. And then sometimes she would be conducting behind me and I would be, you know, looking to her and following her gesture. And it was just such a transformative experience. Like, even talking about it now, I think back to that time and have those same feelings of like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. You know, over 20 years later. And so I did, it was her, but in supported by all of the other music teachers that I had, you know, in my journey in public school. And that's something too, that I'm so grateful for all of those experiences, because I find that I draw on those experiences on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. You know, having played clarinet parts where, you know, rhythms are really challenging and, you know, you're in all kinds of registers, et cetera. Like, I draw on that musicianship, you know, and even the piano lessons that I took as a kid and all of those sorts of things have really been so helpful to me. So I think that's probably one of my biggest inspirations. And then since then, I've sought out opportunities with tremendous mentors to learn and grow as much as possible. And so I remember, for example, I was at the College of New Jersey and, you know, in the right program now, in a music education program, and really excited about teaching. And one of my friends said, you have got to see Dr. Janet Galvan work at Ithaca College. And so I drove up one weekend over a choral concert and I watched her in action. And I thought, oh my goodness, like, I need to work with this person. She is amazing. And that was a hugely transformative experience for me as well. I started driving up during my student teaching period. And then I taught in a couple of maternity leave positions because I graduated in the fall, having switched degree programs and institutions from nursing to music. I graduated, you know, one semester in the fall, and then had the spring, and I taught in those a couple maternity leave positions, and I used to drive up to Ithaca to take conducting lessons in preparation for graduate school auditions, and got into, you know, several places, but ultimately decided to go there because I knew that I would have opportunities for mentorship, and not just mentorship from somebody who looked like me. In terms of being a woman and a conductor. And that was hugely transformative. And I also got to study with Larry Dobler there, who was also amazing. And so it was a wonderful experience, and I could still take lessons, et cetera. So she inspired me, he inspired me. My voice teacher is amazing. And then I loved teaching high school after that. That's one of the things that when I talk to folks about graduate programs in general, or why I decided to make the move, because sometimes I get asked, like, what made you decide that you wanted to go and pursue a doctorate? And I always talk about how much I loved teaching high school, mm-hmm. that it was Every day was a new adventure, and with opportunities to help students discover the artistry within themselves. For those of us who are teaching currently in the field or who are studying to become music teachers, you have so much opportunity every day to help people see their abilities and grow their talents that they didn't know that they had, so that they have, you know, this gift of being able to make music and participate in artistry like their entire lives. And, you know, that wasn't unique to me, but that was something that's something that's such a gift in our teaching field, is that we have this opportunity. And so I loved that, but I also felt like I was really ready to learn more. Mm-hmm. And grow as a teacher conductor. I felt like I'd practiced a lot of the skills that I learned, and I'm a voracious learner, and I'm very always excited about, you know, learning new things, observing people, learning new repertoire, working on teaching strategies that are going to be even more efficient, et cetera. And so I ultimately decided to go to Michigan State University for this amazing trifecta of Drs. David Rail, Sandra Snow, and Jonathan Reed. And again, just being inspired every day, not only by them, but also by my amazing cohort of folks that I got to work with. So, you know, in terms of when you talk about, you know, people who are of influence, I feel so grateful that I have so many folks that that inspired me in their journey. And I also want to say, too, to those folks who are young conductors, take every opportunity that you can to be open and observe the your surroundings and learn from the people who are around you, and take it all in, because we are so fortunate, you know, in our discipline that we get to be surrounded by wonderful people and artists regularly.
Absolutely.
I know that was a little long-winded, but I get very excited.
I was gonna say, I love asking people that question, because everyone's story like sort of has the same idea, but they're all so different in, mm-hmm. in the way that you're inspired. And yeah, I think it's always like it's that one teacher that gives you the opportunity, and then you're in, like you have the conducting bug and you want to do it. So I think that was really special that you talked about the middle school choir director.
It also is important to note like how many people influence us.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really big things and sometimes it's small things, you know. How great is it that your cohort and the people that you learn from are probably still inspiring you to this day, you know? So, and you probably are inspiring them too. So it's kind of give and take a bit. So
yeah.
Speaking of your high school experience, maybe we can move into the topic for today, which is recruiting and retainment for the performing ensemble. So I'll let you take it away, Dr. St. John.
Sounds
we might ask some questions along the way.
Sounds good. So recruitment and retention, these are things that I'm really passionate about. And I don't have any one particular magic thing that works that, you know, oh, try this, and all of the singers come racing into your room. And then, you know, I find that recruitment it permeates my teaching. It's a part of something that I think about regularly, like all the time. And that it's something that is context-based. So oftentimes context-based and context-driven. So what I mean by that is the very first thing that I think about when I think about recruiting for ensembles is first taking a look at the things that we already have in place. What things are working in the program? Where are students engaged, you know, singers engaged? What's going well? What students are involved in the program, what students are not involved in the program, and, you know, does the program meet the needs of the community? And so that's something that I always think about, and I've been really fortunate to work in great places. I taught in two different high school programs, and then also at Georgia State and here. And in each of these places, I've been able to implement a variety of sort of context-specific strategies that have helped to grow programs. And so I'll give you an example. When I was teaching high school in New Jersey, at the second school I was at, I was there for 4 years. The program grew from probably around 150 students to over 270 students.
Wow.
And
oh, wow.
In the year that I was leaving, there were over 300 students enrolled, and they hired a second teacher for the year after, for the following year when I left. Mm-hmm. So I know that for me, these strategies have worked really well. And so I'll just share some of them with the listeners. So for example, I found in the high school that I stayed at the longest, there were, I found that there were, we had three ensembles, well, two ensembles that met during the day, and both of them were mixed, and one of them met in two sections. So there were three mixed choirs, and two of those sections were the Y'all Come Choir that were split, and the other one was an honors weighted mixed ensemble, which, what a gift to have in a high school setting, an honors weighted mixed ensemble. And one of the things that I noticed, though, is that there was not a home for advanced treble singers. Most of the time, treble singers outnumber the tenor and bass singers by large margins in choral programs. And I know many choral directors, you know, work constantly and diligently on engaging tenor and bass singers. But the reality is we just often have so many more treble singers. And so I was finding that students who did not make the top mixed ensemble for reasons of balance, so that, you know, you were singing a well-balanced SATB mixed repertoire, would sometimes decide not to continue singing in a choral ensemble because they didn't want to have the same experience that they had had, you know, over the last however many years that they sang throughout, you know, their time in school, where they were singing, you know, with students who were in more beginner level singers. And so I talked to students and I asked them questions like, what, you know, what would help you to feel connected to the program? And a lot of the students who were sort of on the fence about continuing, especially the treble singers, said, you know, I really want to be more challenged. And you know, as teachers, especially as music teachers, I think we're often really strong at differentiating instruction, providing formative feedback, especially all the time, the whole rehearsal, we often provide, you know, immediate feedback on improvement. Right. But if you're a student who's, you know, sung 6 or 7 years and you sight read reasonably well, and you're with somebody who's singing for the very first time and they're learning how to match pitch, for example, which, by the way, I firmly believe you can teach everybody to match pitch. There's lots of different strategies to do that. There are just opportunities for you perhaps to be more challenged in a different program structure. And so as part of that, I worked to establish an auditioned honors weighted treble ensemble. And okay. I talked with the district, administrators. I had an amazing, amazing, music and arts supervisor at the time. And I said, you know, if basically, you know, we have all these treble singers that would qualify to be in an honors level group, but because of the class size and the need for a balanced repertoire, we don't have a space. And I said, when we do AP, you know, when y'all look at the number of sections that you include for AP biology and you have 47 students that are eligible to take it, you know, we create another section for those students to be able to take that class. And I said, that's what I'm asking here, is for another section that's going to help, you know, of an honors level ensemble that's going to help meet the needs of the students who qualify. And I said, this would be a treble ensemble. And so the first year, there were 27 students in the group. And I found that students came back to singing who sang in middle school or junior high or elementary school, they came back, you know, okay, let me experience this. Let me try this out now that there's an honors level treble ensemble and there's another opportunity. And that was very transformative for myself, but also the program. And I found after that, it was my third year teaching there at the second school that I was at. And I found that just creating that ensemble created so many positive experiences for the entire choral program. And the numbers just exploded after that. And I mean, across the board, the honors level mixed ensemble was still 48, but the second year of that treble group, which was my last year there, was 52 singers, I think. Then we had three sections of the non-auditioned mixed choir because there was just a lot of excitement. And I'm sharing this to say that I think there are ways that we can look at our program structures to see, does this meet the needs of our community? And now that those advanced, you know, intermediate advanced singers were in their own ensembles being challenged, you know, at their level of experience, that also allowed for the Y'all Come Choir, more folks in there to be singing at a more similar level. And by level, I don't mean like quality, I mean like experience level. So that repertoire, you know, selecting repertoire and all of these kinds of considerations that we think about rehearsal strategies met their needs as well. Better. And so that's something to think about. And then for recruiting tenors and basses, I worked to create so that ensemble was curricular. And then the tenor and bass ensemble that I created, transitioned, was extracurricular and not co-curricular. So folks did not need to be in a daytime choir in order to be in the tenor bass ensemble. I wanted to create an opportunity where students could try singing in an ensemble, tenors and basses, without a huge commitment, and that they could feel free to take risks and see if this was something for them. Mm-hmm. So that group was auditioned, but I use audition in air quotes, because it was auditioned in that I accepted students who could match pitch. I firmly believe that we can teach pitch matching. In fact, I know we can because I've done it. And lots of my colleagues have done it, and lots of the listeners have also done that. And if you're somebody who hasn't had the opportunity to help somebody learn to match pitch, it is such a rewarding thing, because it's like you've unlocked this ability for folks then to be able to sing and be artistic and be confident in that. But this ensemble, this tenor bass ensemble, met once a week after school for about 25 or 30 minutes. And so that was not quite enough time to be able to teach pitch matching and repertoire. And so that's why the only criteria for that ensemble was being able to match pitch. And so the first year, that ensemble was about 13 tenors and basses. And I was very strategic with the repertoire that I selected. So I picked only things that I knew they would sound good singing, things that were going to challenge them, but no matter what, they were going to excel at. Mm-hmm. And no matter if one or two didn't come to rehearsal every single week or what have you. Mm-hmm. And with the number of students. After that year, the subsequent year, there were 38 tenors and basses in that ensemble. And then the third year of that group, we had over 40. And my last year there, we had over 50.
Oh, wow.
I'm sharing this because I think, again, that yes, that's there are a lot of factors that go into recruiting, but I think program structure is a huge part of it. And then I found that a lot of those tenors and basses who didn't know that they had those, you know, talents or skills, had not tried singing before, would sometimes transition into singing in some of the curricular ensembles because they had a newly discovered talent that they had. We talk a lot of times about singing and music as a gift. And I think, yes, it can be a gift, but I also strongly believe and know to be true that it's something, it's a skill that you can learn. Mm-hmm. we don't go into algebra class, or hardly, some of us probably do, but not many of us go into our algebra class already knowing algebra. And so I am just a huge proponent of, in every single program where I've worked, it's really an important part of my philosophy that there is a place for every individual who would like to sing to be a part of that. And I've been fortunate to work in places where that's also been supported. And so if you're in the Kansas City area and you would like to sing at UMKC, Choral Union meets on Tuesday evenings from 7 to 9 p.m. And we'd love to have you join us. I know that's like a little plug in the middle.
No, that's perfect.
No, that's great. Or if you're looking at grad school, look at UMKC.
Yeah,
so. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, I was just going to say what you're saying, I totally agree with. Like, you have to be willing to really take a look at what you're doing and like reinvent the wheel in some ways. Like, be willing to take that risk to do something different. To recruit your people.
Yes. And the other thing I would say too is talk to your peers. Mm-hmm. Talk to your colleagues, talk to your peers, ask questions of veteran teachers. I mean, when I taught high school in New Jersey, I was often at concerts from neighboring schools, or shadowing other teachers, or engaging in conversations with teachers, you know, who had programs that I admired. Like, what's your structure? How are you, you know, how are you doing this? How do you pick your repertoire? You know, your group sounds amazing. How did you get the buy-in for, you know, this, that, or the other thing? So the first part of that, the recruitment, is about observing your context. And then for me, I find the next part to be about making connections within the school. Mm-hmm. And so I have this phrase that I think about, which is building rapport engages everyone in recruitment. I classify myself as an extroverted extrovert. And so I love talking with people. I find it energizing. And so in that way, I feel fortunate in the business that we're in to just start conversations with folks. But I think making connections is really important. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, sharing with your current students that you're, you know, if anybody has any friends that might be interested in joining us, like, let me know. I'd love to reach out to them or invite them, or you feel empowered to invite them. Engaging with your current students' friends, engaging with fellow faculty members, and just sort of building relationships in lots of areas. And not for the express purpose of recruiting, but because we are better humans in life when we have relationships. You know, humans are social creatures. There's lots of research about, you know, how the challenges of the technology have sort of allowed for a lot of isolation, especially, you know, for adults. And I think about that, you know, we're in a field that is largely team-based. I like to joke, like, there's no I in choir, but like there is. And I'm sure somebody listening to this podcast just rolled their eyes. But I mean, I know there's an I in choir. But it's, you know, a play on there's no I in team. And sometimes I use humor in rehearsals, or as one of my former church choir members say, I always try to make jokes, but sometimes they don't land. I love that because it's true. But I, you know, I try to use humor as well. But we really are in like team-like social connectiveness fields in music ensembles, especially.
Sure.
And so just thinking about that in general, you know, if you're in teaching in a school, how you relate to the coaches, for example, is really important. Yes, we want the students to be at the choral ensemble rehearsals and performances, but coaches are also trying to teach the athletes that they're coaching a sense of responsibility as well, and they need their participants as well. So when I was teaching high school, I always told students that please give your coaches the schedule for the choral, you know, the after-school activities, whatever it is, concerts, rehearsals, dress rehearsals. But that if there's a conflict, please let me know and I will contact the coach directly. And I say this because so often I've heard from, other colleagues in the field that they're sometimes have challenges when the students are involved in multiple activities. And yes, sometimes students need to make a choice. if they want to be in the musical and that musical rehearses from 3 to 5 p.m. and they want to be on the soccer team and soccer, I know they don't call it rehearsal, they call it practice. Practices from 3 to 5 p.m. every day, like the musical, then students need to make decisions. You know, they need to make choices. But if things don't conflict except for one or two things, then how we engage with the coaches and how we resolve conflicts is really important. And so I always used to say to the students, let me take you out of the equation and I will go talk to the coach and work this out. And we'll let you know, the best way to proceed so that you are not penalized. Mm-hmm. And so I would go to coaches and say, okay, you're the varsity lacrosse coach. I've got three varsity players that are also in the choirs and our concert's the same day as one of your meets. And that I know, that these three players are really integral to your game. Is there a way that we can support the students doing both things? Our concert starts at 7 or 7:30, whatever the time is. And at what time does your game start? And is there a way to make this work? And I always, to a person, have been able to help with some sort of negotiation. Mm-hmm. And then advise the students. So I took the stress off of the students. Because I thought that was really important. If we put students in the middle of these situations where adults in the same organization, especially, put them in stressful situations and at odds, a lot of times I found that students would drop one program or another.
Right.
That they felt like, well, I guess I just can't do both things because I don't want to feel that, stress of disappointing one or disappointing another. And I just didn't want that for the students. This was supposed to be an artistic outlet for them. And the sports are supposed to be an athletic outlet for them. And all of them are collaborative and team focused. And so how do we maintain that for the students? And then I would also say, in the same way, engaging with your administration and your counselors. I used to invite counselors to come to my class to see, what it was that was going on in terms of watching how we learn, watching how everybody works well together. It's not just, okay, we learn some songs and then go sing on a stage. It's like there's a lot of other elements. We all know this when we teach music ensembles. But imagine, folks that didn't have that experience growing up or in programs or have very limited experience with this, just making it an accessible and a welcome space for especially counselors who are curious about what it is that we're doing and how the students are learning. I found that was a huge component of recruitment. Mm-hmm. That counselors would often advise students, if a student was then saying, like, I think I want to do choir, they would say, you're going to love this class, you're going to have a great time, you're going to work hard, and sort of manage expectations in that way. In the same vein, if a student said, well, I want to do something easy, I'll just sing in a choir or whatever, or just show up. They said, just so you know, if that's what you're looking to do, this is not the elective for you. Like Miss Senjin is going to really encourage you to be participating fully. And so, but they knew that because I had invited them into my classroom and they had come and seen. One thing that I think is really also super helpful is invite your counselors to the concerts. The first time I thought about this, about 3 weeks ahead of the concert, I wrote to the counselors and I said, I'd love to invite you to come to the concert. The concert's this day. We have, at the time, I think there were over 200 students singing. And I said, I know sometimes you go to sporting events to see, the students that you advise participate. If you want to get a lot of birds with one stone, you can come to a choral concert. You'll have at least 20 or so students that you advise singing, and I know they would love to know that you were there and if you see them afterward. And so the very first time I sent it, no counselors came to the concert. And, I could definitely have taken that as discouraging, but I didn't, because I find I'm somebody who when you get to a locked door, then I look for a window, then I look for a different door, then I look for other ways and other solutions and other strategies. And so I thought, several counselors wrote back and said, I'm sorry, I'm not able to go. I've got plans this day, but definitely let me know about the next one. So I responded and said, oh, here's the next date and we'd love to have you. So 3 weeks before the next concert, I wrote to them all individually again. And then several came. Because by then, they had the expectation, or I had established the expectation, that I would write to them and invite them to the concerts and that they would consider going. And so they talked about it in their weekly counselor meeting, and several decided to go have dinner together and then come to the concert, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And so then we established that that was a tradition. And so then after the next concert, several would say to me, Jen, I'm going to be there for this next one. I can't come to this other one, but so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so and I are going to go grab dinner and then we're going to come. And so it was just about building the culture. So I also say, as you're learning, you know, as you're starting in schools and you're experimenting with recruitment, try not to get discouraged if one strategy that you do or you try doesn't work as you hoped the first time. Sometimes it's just a matter of being persistent and trying it again and really leaning into that. You know, that has been helpful. So those are just some strategies that I thought I'd share. And I think those are probably the most important. I mean, obviously what we do when we have singers in the ensemble is really important. That could be a whole other conversation about how to create meaningful experiences in the classroom. But just generally about, you know, recruiting, I think, you know, there are some things there that I hope folks find helpful.
Yeah. And I think for the listeners, hopefully you picked up on this, but something I really appreciate is how Dr. Sinjin is sharing that this whole process and this everything that she's learning is really student focused. And I really appreciate that, because I feel like sometimes it's hard for conductor teachers to put themselves second. You know, it's like, well, I want to do this music and this is really cool, blah, 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 blah. But what you said is you asked your students what they needed, they responded, and you figured out a way to help them. So I just really appreciate that. So I hope everybody else listening kind of had a smile like I did when they heard that. So thanks for sharing all the ideas. You answered a lot of my questions, which is like bonus points. So
awesome. I didn't realize this was a scoring system, but bonus points sound good.
A++.
A++.
But yeah, I also loved everything you said. I always say the three R's: relationships, recruitment, retention. And you hit on relationships perfect. Like you have to have that rapport with not only the students, but like all of your faculty members as well. Literally yesterday, I went and worked the gate at the volleyball game. And they were like, oh my God, I can't believe the strings teacher is like doing that. I'm like, yeah, I don't care. I'm here for the kids and I wanted to help you out. So here I am. And of course, all the kids are like, Mr. Hancher, you're at the volleyball game. It's like, yep, here I am. But it's very meaningful to them. So the relationships are extremely important in recruiting.
Absolutely. Sure. And I would say authentic relationships, you know, not in a, well, if I talk to this student, you know, maybe they'll participate. No, like really caring about these individuals, these humans that we have in the room. I mean, I've said this before in this podcast, but it's such a gift. Teaching is such a gift. Mm-hmm. And I don't take that for granted. You know, I think every day about my amazing mentors and, you know, what I'm just to use another word, what a gift, you know, a blessing it was that I was able to study with them and work with them and how generous they were with their time and their resources. And that I still can call them and ask questions. You know, I think those were my models. And I still think about that. I mean, I have students now that I taught in high school when they were in high school who are now music teachers, and I could not be more proud of them, who still write to me with questions or dialogue and things. And it's and I love that so much, because we're sharing. It's reciprocal. And it's just really special. I think it's really special to be able to engage with folks during, you know, formative times of their lives and learning, mm-hmm. and empowering students and encouraging them. And, you know, Cole, to speak to what you said about putting the students in the center, I think as young teachers, it's really, especially if you're, you know, an overachiever, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, like, you know, you're somebody, you're driven, you're excited, you're energized, to really focus on like, okay, well, how am I doing? What am I doing? And as soon as we flip that and we start really centering the students, like, what do they need? How can I teach them where they're at? I mean, the processes that we use, you know, thinking about that in terms of what do they need and creating enjoyable rehearsals where we're getting tons of things done and they're singing really well and making lots of progress, but making that an engaging experience so that they enjoy the process. I mean, the product gets better as a result of that. Right. But that's not the end goal. The end goal is that we're helping students to experience artistry and carry that with them, you know, throughout their lives. One other thing I'd like to also share, and this is not recruiting for the program that you're in, but when I taught high school, I know that the transition from high school into college for those students who are college bound, or into singing in community choirs, et cetera, or church choirs or temple choirs or in any other organization outside of a school, that sometimes it's hard to make that leap or to figure out how do I get into this, especially when you are going to be a freshman in a college or university. And so I used to ask students at the end of the year, if you would like me to put you in contact with the college director at the school that you're going to, I am happy to help facilitate that so that if you decided you wanted to sing, you had an opportunity to do that. Because college can be really overwhelming, especially, you know, as a freshman when you're coming in. And by overwhelming, I mean in a great way, but it's different. It's way less structured in terms of high school, you know, where it's like you show up at 7 and you go to this class and this, and then you have 3 minutes of passing time or 5 minutes, and then you go to the next one, et cetera. You know, in college, it's a lot, there's a lot more individual responsibility and accountability, and sometimes it takes folks sometimes to get used to that. Mm-hmm. Well, I find that especially as freshmen, if folks come in and they enter a music ensemble, you have an instant community of people that you can talk to, engage with, you know, in addition to your classes. Mm-hmm. And so I used to, students would, if they wanted me to, write their name and their email address down and the school they went to. And then I would write an email to whatever college director, that I would figure out who they were at different schools, some I knew already, and I would send them the list of students and say, these are all the students that have expressed interest in singing in college. And if you would be interested in having them, you know, I'm sure they would love to know more about the program. Because again, in the summer, you know, before college starts, it's like they're getting lots of information. Here's how you move in. Here's your schedule. Here's how this works. Here are the buildings. Here are the maps, et cetera. And so I just encourage any, especially secondary school teacher who's listening to this, to consider ways that we might also help our students to bridge that gap, to help them to continue singing. And even offering, you know, if you're going somewhere and you'd like to sing in a community choir and you'd like me to help you, put you in contact with somebody. I mean, we know as music teachers that, you know, we can Google and find places that would be appropriate for our students to continue participating. Mm-hmm. But even like a community band, you know, helping them to still be connected to, you know, a music field where they might also have community.
For sure. Well, Dr. Senjan, thank you so much. Everything that you're saying is very inspiring, and I totally agree with everything you're saying. Speaking of finding those college directors and talking to them, we like to do a conductor to watch on our episodes. So we'll all three share our conductor. I'll share mine first. My conductor is Dr. Robert Hasty from the University of Central Florida. I did a masterclass with him back in February, I think it was February, and he was just so great. He had lots of great things to say. His orchestra sounded fantastic, and it was just a really great time. So I think everyone should check him out.
Mm-hmm. I'll share mine next. Mine is Dr. Amanda Quist from Western Michigan University. She actually just is starting there for you folks who might be like, wait, isn't she at Miami University in Florida? Or she's now going to Western Michigan. But I also just did a master class with her and got to sit in some sessions of hear all the things that she is interested in. She's a really, really cool and talented conductor. So what about you, Dr. St. John? Who is your person?
I love that. It's so hard to narrow it down because we have so many amazing folks in our field. But one that comes to mind right now is somebody who's chatting with earlier today, and that is Dr. Erin Plisco at Missouri State University. She's a brilliant conductor teacher, and her ensembles have performed at divisional and national conferences, and she's very thoughtful, and she cares so deeply about her students. She's really smart, and just great people. Just a really good person. So I think that I would say Erin Plisco.
Great. Well, Dr. St. John, again, it's been really great meeting you. And I hope that our listeners took a lot away from this. I'm sure they have. I know I have.
Just like us. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you both so much for the opportunity. And I hope you all have a great day.
Yes, of course. Thank you. All right. Until next time, Young Conductors Podcast listeners, we'll see you then.
Thanks, everyone.